We're going to go to John chapter 11. John chapter 11. This is a really fun chapter to look at. We saw previously, after the Feast of Dedication, and the Feast of Dedication occurred in December. It's what we call today Hanukkah, or the Feast of Lights. After that, Jesus Christ went there, and after that, he traveled to an area beyond Jordan. He got out of Judea because they were hunting for him and they wanted to kill him, so he left. And the remaining events of Jesus Christ's life occurred in the winter and moving into the spring before the final trip to Jerusalem and the Passover. So we're going to start in verse 1. It says, "Now a certain man was sick named Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha." Okay, and Bethany is a town that it's just inside the border of Judea. And, you know, it's down towards Jerusalem, but it's not, you know, right there. But it's still in Judea. And then verse 2 is a parenthesis, and it says, "It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick." Now that's a parenthesis. And if you go to chapter 12, it says in verse 2, Jesus went to the house of Lazarus in verse 1, and then verse 2, "And there they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. And then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the odor of the ointment." So John is written, I don't know how many years after the death of Jesus Christ, probably 50 years after. A long time anyway, and it's looking back and it's a narrative. So this parenthesis is an explanation of Mary, but it's something that happens after chapter 11. You know, it's out of context. It's not in chronological order. Okay? But it explains who Mary was and what she did. So it says, "It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick." Apparently, Jesus Christ had a good relationship with Lazarus and Martha and Mary. And at times, maybe they traveled with him or followed him as the group, you know, the disciples. We don't know, but he apparently had a good relationship because he goes to see them. They talk to him. They send messages to him. And it says, "Therefore his sister sent to him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick." So she speaks of her brother Lazarus as the one whom Jesus Christ loves. So it was his friend, yeah. I don't know how he had any time to have friendship, but he was his friend, you know. Mm-hmm. "When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby." So this is interesting. Now, did God make Lazarus sick? No. But because he got sick, Jesus Christ said, it will be for the glory of God and that the Son of God might be glorified. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So he loved them all. You know, a great relationship. "And when he had heard, therefore, that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was," which was beyond Jordan somewhere outside of Judea. And then after that, saith he to his disciples, "Let us go into Judea again." So he's deciding he's going to go back to Judea. So You know, usually if somebody's in trouble and you hear that they need help, you want to go as fast as you can. But Jesus Christ always did the will of the Father. So in this case, he waited. He waited because God told him to. You know, it's and if people looked at it sense knowledge wise, which we're going to see, they're going to say, well, you know, why'd he wait? So verse 7, then after that, saith he to his disciples, let us go into Judea again. His disciples say unto him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, and goest thou thither again? So here his disciples doubt his judgment and his decision. Now these guys had been with him through thick and thin. They had seen him feed 4,000. They had seen him heal 5,000. They had seen him raise the guy at Nain from the dead, the man on the bear, you know, with the mother there crying. He had compassion. He raised him from the dead. He saw him heal blind people and lame people and cast out devils and all kinds of great stuff. And yet here, you know, they say, why do you want to go there? They're going to kill you. They doubted his decision and his judgment. But Jesus Christ always did the will of the Father. And it says so numerous places in John. Let's go to chapter 5. Because the disciples were there when he said these things. Or in chapter 5, verse 30, Jesus Christ speaking said, I can of mine own self do nothing. That's an incredible statement, even in and of itself. You know? We have a tendency in life to be, you know, if we achieve or we work at something, we go, wow, look at what I did. Jesus Christ said, I can of my own self do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just because I seek not mine own will, but the will of the Father, which hath sent me. He always sought to do the will of the Father. In chapter 6 and verse 38, it says, for I came down from heaven not to do mine own will, but the will of him that sent me. So again, I came to do the will of him that sent me. So Jesus Christ didn't send himself, did he? God sent him. In chapter 8, verse 29. And remember, some of his disciples and his apostles were with him every time he said these things. Chapter 8, verse 29. And he that sent me is with me. The Father hath not left me alone, for I do always those things that please him. So, back to chapter 11. So they said, what do you want to go there for? They want to kill you. They didn't get it yet. All the times they were with Jesus Christ, the things they heard him teach and say, and how he always did what God wanted him to do, how he walked by revelation. I mean, the things he did, you know, you just couldn't do off the top of your head or with just human abilities or skills. You had to be walking with God. And yet they doubted his judgment and his decision. Verse 9, Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? That's kind of an interesting response, huh? Are there not 12 hours in the day, meaning daylight? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbles because there is no light in him. So Jesus Christ is not referring to the sunlight. He's not referring to, you know, the brightness of day, but he's referring to walking in the light of God's word. These things said he, And after that, he saith unto them, our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep. So he's telling his disciples this. Then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well. You know, if you're sick, you really need to sleep to get your strength and recover and heal up and blah, blah, blah. Howbeit, Jesus spake of his death. Now, you notice this is all in the past tense, right? Because, again, this is a narrative, and John is writing this down by revelation, what God told him to do, but it's years and years after it occurred. But they thought that he had spoken of taking rest and sleep. Then said Jesus unto them plainly, boldly, Lazarus is dead. Wow, that was a slap in the face. Mm-hmm. What a slap in the face. Many times in the Word of God, the word sleep is used as a euphemism, which is a figure of speech for death. A euphemism is a figure where a hard or harsh or blunt word or phrase are replaced by a softer, milder word or phrase. Okay, so if we go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, we see it used referring to what we all look forward to, the gathering together. And in verse 13 of chapter 4, it says, but I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning them which are asleep. Not referring to people that are sleeping. They weren't ignorant of people sleeping. They were ignorant about people who had died. That you sorrow not. You know, why would you sorrow if somebody was sleeping? Right? And it's not talking about physical sleep, but death. Even as others which have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so, them also which sleep in Jesus will God bring with him. So he's speaking about people that are Christians that have died. He says they've fallen asleep, but when Jesus Christ comes back, they will rise up again. They'll be gathered together. It's a whole explanation there. And then if you want to read more, 1 Corinthians tells more about it. Let's go to the Old Testament, because this is also used in the Old Testament, in Deuteronomy 31. I mean, most people are familiar with Thessalonians, but it's also used in the Old Testament, which I thought was interesting. Deuteronomy 31 and verse 16. It says, and the Lord said unto Moses, behold, thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, and this people will rise up and go whoring after the gods of the strangers of the land, whither they go to be among them, and will forsake me and break my covenant which I have made with them. So here God's telling Moses he will sleep with his fathers. His fathers being, you know, his forefathers, his father, his grandfather, who are all gone, passed away. And then in 2 Samuel, chapter 7, there's another usage. Chapter 7, verse 12. This is the prophet Nathan talking to David. And he says, and when the days be fulfilled, and thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, I will set up thy seed after thee, which shall proceed out of thy bowels, and I will establish his kingdom. So that was to David. Back to John 11. So Jesus Christ, you know, he went through this, you know, he's sleeping, but I will awake him. And they said, oh, well, it's good if he sleeps. And then they say, Jesus finally says to them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there to the intent ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. He said, you know, I'm glad we weren't there, because now you're going to get a chance to believe. Then said Thomas, which is called Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, let us also go that we may die with him. So again, you know, They're not really confident in that Jesus Christ knows what he's doing or making the right decision, but they're going to be brave and they're going to go and die with the die with their leader. Great. Then when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already. So, you know, he waited 2 days. He had to travel. So in that time somewhere, he didn't get a message. He didn't get a phone call. He didn't get a telegraph. He didn't get a letter. But he knew that he was dead. And he found out that he had been in the grave 4 days already. So I don't know how long it took from where he was staying to get down to where Lazarus lived, down to Bethany. But, you know, certainly took a couple of days. He waited 2 days and then he had to travel. And Lazarus was in the ground 4 days. Now, verse 18. Now, Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem about 15 furlongs, which is about 1.7 miles. So it's actually pretty close to Jerusalem, isn't it? The only time I ever hear furlongs is if you watch a horse race. Mm-hmm. You know, they're still measuring furlongs and stuff like that. Anyway. 19. And many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Jews being Judeans, because they were in Judea. The word Jews is usually really the word Judea in the text, but it was changed at some point in the English versions. So, many of the Judeans came to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary sat still in the house. Now, the custom of the Jews, when somebody dies, there's a couple of things they have to do. They have to bury the body within 24 hours. They don't allow embalming, even today. An interesting little sidelight, you can't have tattoos. If you have a tattoo, they will amputate the arm and it will not be buried in the Jewish cemetery. I know that only because I work with a guy and he had tattoos. But then the other thing is the family sits what they call Shiva. Right? They sit there for 7 days. They don't eat. I mean, they don't work. They don't cook. They don't do anything. And the neighbors and the relatives bring their food to them. And they just sit there and they mourn and they grieve and they pray. And then people come in and pay their respects and all that stuff. So this is what Mary and Martha were doing. They were sitting Shiva. And it says, but Mary sat still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus. So she went and found Jesus. And she said, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. Wow. That's quite a welcome. Uh-oh. My wife's going to sneeze. Warning you. Anyway, well, I was warning everybody. That's all, because it might have been loud. So, you know, Jesus Christ has come. She goes, you know, if you'd have been here, he wouldn't have died. How would you like that, huh? What kind of, you know, he's the guy you loved, but you couldn't get here to save him. Yeah, putting guilt on him. Verse 22, but I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it to thee. So she's kind of hedging a little bit. You know, if you ask God, whatever you ask him, he'll do it. Jesus saith unto her, thy brother shall rise again. Martha saith unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. So she's not thinking he's going to rise from the dead now. And she did know about the resurrection in the future, which all the Jews were supposed to know about. But there was a lot of strange stuff going on at this time, including the belief in reincarnation. Was one of the things going around. So she said, he said, thy brother shall rise again. She said, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. In other words, she still doubts you know, she's still, you know, well, if he'd have been here, he wouldn't have died. Jesus said unto her, verse 25, I am the resurrection and the life. There's another one of those I am metaphors that are prevalent in the book of John. I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. Wow, that's pretty cool. In the NIV, it says, he who believes in me will live even though he dies. So, now the Jews knew of the resurrection. If you remember in Hebrews 11, I think verse 8, where it says, Abram looked toward a city whose builder and maker was God. You know, they looked forward to that day when it would be paradise on earth. They never had the promise of heaven in the Old Testament. They, you know, like today it's prevalent. Oh, he's in a better place, or they're in heaven and all this stuff. And that was never part of the doctrine of the Old Testament. That was never a consideration. The consideration was the resurrections, that they would rise again. So he says, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believeth thou this? She saith unto him, yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. Wow, she's pretty sharp on that, wasn't she? So, and when she had so said, she went her way and called Mary, her sister, secretly, saying, the Master is come and calleth for thee. So apparently Jesus Christ must have said, where's your sister Mary? Because she said, Jesus calls for you. As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came unto him. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. The Jews then, which were with her in the house and comforted her. I wonder how much they comfort her. I don't know. Right. When they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, she goeth unto the grave to weep there. They figured, well, she must be going. She's going to cry at the gravesite. Then when Mary was come where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. So he gets hit again with the same accusation from both sisters. You know, if you'd have been here, if you'd have got off your lazy butt and gotten here, you could have saved our brother. It's pretty amazing.
They're probably so confused.
Well, I'm sure they were, but that's still in all. They didn't have the confidence in Jesus Christ, and they put that on him, both of them. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled.
I imagine.
You know, he said, you know, here I am. Why are you like this? And said, where have ye laid him? They said unto him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. Why did he weep? Well, he was weeping not because Lazarus was dead. He was weeping because of their unbelief, because they didn't believe. He was there and he was going to bring deliverance. What did he tell his disciples? For the to glorify God and to glorify the Son of God. That's why he was going. Then said the Jews, behold how he loved him. And some of them said, could not this man which opened the eyes of the blind have caused that even this man should not have died? So now the same idea is getting around. You know, if he'd have been here, he could have saved him. He wouldn't have died if he'd have been here. Jesus, therefore, again groaning in himself, cometh to the grave. It was a cave. and a stone lay upon it. Jesus said, "Take ye away the stone." Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, "Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days." You know, that body is going to start to rot, and it doesn't take long, you know, for them to start to really putrefy and stink. And I had a friend that was in law school, and he went to an autopsy. And he said it was the worst thing he ever went to. He said it was unbearable. Anyway, he stinketh. 4 days. Verse 40. Jesus saith unto her, "Said I not unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God?" You know, if you believe, you'll see the glory of God. Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me." He's saying this, he's praying to God out loud. And he's doing it for a reason. Verse 42, "And I knew that thou hearest always, but because of the people which stand by, I said it that they may believe that thou hast sent me." You know, he's saying it out loud so that they can see that he's the Messiah. He's the one that God sent for their salvation. Wow. "And when he had thus spoken, he cried with a loud voice, 'Lazarus, come forth.'" Lazarus, come forth. "And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. And Jesus saith unto them, 'Loose him and let him go.'" And it's like, you ever see The Mummy? That's basically what it was. You know, he was wrapped in linen or whatever it is they used, and you know, they covered his face and they wrapped up the body, and he came out in the grave clothes. Yeah, who must have been. I bet there was a few people that lost it. "So Jesus Christ said, 'Loose him and let him go.' Then many of the Jews which came to Mary and had been seen the things which Jesus did believed on him." So people believed. And that's why he prayed out loud. And that's why he came there to glorify God, so that people would believe. "But some of them went their ways to the Pharisees and told them what things Jesus had done." So some of them believed, but some of them went to the Pharisees. Because why? The Pharisees and the Judeans had been searching for Jesus Christ so that they could kill him. So here they are again. And so some of them go, maybe they figured they'd get a reward. So they go and they tell the Pharisees. So now, the next verses, 57 through 53, have to do with these guys getting together, planning to kill Jesus Christ. "Then gathered the chief priests and the Pharisees a council and said, 'What do we do? For this man doeth many miracles.'" Okay, chief priests and Pharisees. These two are not the same. I want to stop here for a minute. And I wish that I had the time to really dig into this. But there are two different distinct groups. We have here the Pharisees and the chief priests. The Pharisees were a group that evolved from about the time of Ezra, or the Babylonian captivity. They broke off into two different groups. One, the minority, separated themselves from what they believed an illegitimate high priesthood. The second one, the majority, aimed at controlling the religion of the country. So there were, within the Pharisees, there was a split. The minority viewed the high priests as illegitimate. And the reason for that was the high priest biblically and traditionally were to be in the line of Aaron as God appointed them by way of Moses. So if you hold your place here and go to Exodus 29 and verse 5, it says, "And thou shalt take the garments and put upon Aaron the coat and the robe of the ephod, and the ephod and the breastplate, and gird him with the curious girdle of the ephod. And thou shalt put the mitre upon his head, and put the holy crown upon the mitre. Then shalt thou take the anointing oil and pour it upon his head and anoint him." You know, and it wasn't just oil. If you go back, there's a formula where they mix spices in with, you know, it's a special olive oil and spices. "Then thou shalt take the anointing oil, pour it on his head, and anoint him. Thou shalt bring his sons and put coats upon them, and thou shalt gird them with girdles, Aaron and his sons, and put bonnets on them, and the priest's office shall be theirs for a perpetual statute, and thou shalt consecrate Aaron and his sons." So that was the original intent of the high priest. Now, they were in the tribe of Levi. But all Levites were not priests, only the line of Aaron. Now, there was such a thing called the Levitical priesthood. They were the guys that did other stuff. They, well, we're going to see Numbers chapter 1. If you go to Numbers chapter 1, and verse 47. It says, "But the Levites, after the tribe of their fathers, were not numbered among them," among Israel. All the other tribes were numbered, not the Levites. "For the Lord had spoken unto Moses, saying, Only thou shalt not number the tribe of Levi, neither take the sum of them among the children of Israel. But thou shalt appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony, and over all the vessels thereof, and over all things that belong to it. They shall bear the tabernacle and all the vessels thereof, and they shall minister unto it, and shall encamp round about the tabernacle." So that's what their job was. "And when the tabernacle setteth forward, the Levites shall take it down, and when the tabernacle is to be pitched, the Levites shall set it up, and the stranger that cometh nigh shall be put to death." In other words, anybody that's not a Levite, you know, they're going to just hack them up. "And the children of Israel shall pitch their tents, every man by his own camp and every man by his own standard throughout their hosts. But the Levites shall pitch around the about the tabernacle of testimony, and there be no wrath upon the congregation of the children of Israel. And the Levites shall keep the charge of the tabernacle of the testimony, and the children of Israel did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. So did they." And then in chapter 3, verse 9, it says, "And thou shalt give the Levites unto Aaron and to his sons. They are wholly given unto him out of the children of Israel. And thou shalt appoint Aaron and his sons, and they shall wait on the priest's office. And the stranger that cometh nigh shall be put to death. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, And I, behold, I have taken the Levites from among the children of Israel, instead of all the firstborn that openeth the matrix among the children of Israel. Therefore the Levites shall be mine." So the Levites belonged to God, and they did the service of the tabernacle, and then later on, you know, they moved into the temple, and they did the service in the temple. Now, go to Luke chapter 3. In verse 2, it says, "Annas and Caiaphas, being high priests, the word of God came unto John, the son of Zacharias, in the wilderness." So here it says, Annas and Caiaphas. Annas was the high priest at this time, I believe. Annas had been the high priest for like 9 years, and now Caiaphas had become the high priest. Caiaphas was Annas' son-in-law. Okay? But they were not legitimate high priests. They had been appointed and put in the office by Herod. So I'm not sure how that all worked, but they were appointed, they were not in the line of Herod, or they were not supposed to be. Not only that, but the high priest was supposed to change every year. He wasn't supposed to be there but 1 year of service. But the Pharisees and the priests and the Sadducees were not always friends. They weren't always amicable. They weren't always like-minded. They all really were interested in one thing, and that was power and influence. And so they fought among themselves, but when Jesus Christ came along, they had a common enemy. So they got together among themselves because they wanted him gone, because he was a threat to them. So we'll continue to go back in chapter 11. Verse 47, then gathered the chief priests and Pharisees a council, and that's the word Sanhedrin. Now, the word Sanhedrin, generally speaking, we think of the 70 religious leaders of Israel, the ruling council. But it also can just mean a group of men getting together, a council. So a council, and said, what do we, for this man doeth many miracles? So they admitted he did miracles. If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him. And the Romans shall come and take away both our place and nation. So this is their fear. Their fear is that Jesus Christ will unite the people. They'll believe in him. The Romans will get upset. They'll come in. They'll take the country over and they'll throw these guys out and they'll lose all their power and influence and Israel will be gone. That was their fear. And one of them, Caiaphas, being the high priest that same year, said unto them, ye know nothing at all. You guys are whistling in the breeze here. Nor consider that it is expedient for us. The word expedient means what? Advantageous, profitable for us. It's expedient for us that one man should die for the people and that the whole nation perish not. So how about if this guy dies and we save the country? And this spake he not of himself, but being the high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus should die for that nation. Now, you know, his words were more significant than he even realized. Mm-hmm. Because Jesus Christ was going to die, not just for the nation of Israel, but for all mankind. And he was to be the Passover lamb for all people. And he was to save all of mankind, not just the nation of Israel. And Israel didn't get saved because, you know, in a short time after, they got destroyed and dispersed. And not for that nation only, but that also he should gather together in one the children of God that were scattered abroad. You know, he's going to get all the Jews everywhere, the diaspora, and everybody's going to believe him. From that day forth, they took counsel together for to put him to death. So here are these guys, and they are afraid they're going to lose everything. So what are they doing? They're conspiring. They're plotting. They're going to look for any way possible that they can to put Jesus Christ to death. It says that Caiaphas prophesied that Jesus should die for the nation to preserve Israel. Little did he realize that Jesus Christ was the Messiah and that God had ordained that he would pay the price, be the final sacrifice, and be the true high priest for Israel. Verse 54, Jesus therefore walked no more openly among the Jews. After he took care of Lazarus, he left, and he walked no longer openly in Judea, but went thence into a country near to the wilderness unto a city called Ephraim, and there continued with his disciples. And the Jews' Passover was nigh at hand, and many went out of the country up to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. Then sought they for Jesus, and spake among themselves as they stood in the temple, what think ye, that he will not come to the feast? Now both the chief priests and the Pharisees had given commandment that if any man knew where he were, he should show it, that they might take him or arrest him, physically put him in and incarcerate him so that they could do what? Kill him. That's what I do. So that's where we're going to end off. But Jesus Christ went to Ephraim. He avoided any more contact with the Judeans and the people that wanted to kill him. And he just waited and bided his time until the Passover. And then he did go back to Jerusalem.